here's the thing. If you can't spot the sucker in your first half hour at the table, then you are the sucker.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in. Oh.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Greg Pappas on the board. SP Futures up 10. As the futures down 60, up 65, sorry. They were down last night, but they are up today. We came back yesterday from the big down day on Tuesday. So we'll see where the week lands. Maybe we'll make up all of it Tuesday. We'll see. Of course, as usual, every day, you know, NVIDIA's up $15, a 902. This is the poster child of the world. Lou, do you have your NVIDIA?
No.
Well, see,
you can barely spell it.
Well, yeah, you see, this is the savior of the world, AI. And by the way, I got a call. Well,
talk to Google. Talk to Google about how their AI program's done.
I think everybody knows that the PTI's investment advisor arm is Wall Street Advisors. So I got an email thing from some lady. She's going to take us into the AI world. So I'm going to be the first person to have really stupid commercials out there saying, you want your investment money taken care of by AI? Come to Wall Street Advisors. Now, if it's anything else, I should get so many people because everybody's all over this AI. I'll be able to turn them away. There'll be a line down the block. What do you think?
I would not... I would not trust any AI system where I didn't have a pretty good, honest, and that's the key word.
Who said I was going to have an AI system? I'm just going to talk about
honest, it. Honest explanation of the algorithm and what, you know, what the algorithm, you know, how they've designed the algorithm and what it actually does. And then I'd want to see, you know, I'd want to see multiple search results and multiple taskings to see what kind of product it's producing.
Lou, you're obviously unclear on the concept. I want to be able to go to a meeting and I have some buffoon with me. Every time people ask about how I manage money for them, I want some idiot to just go, all right, and I'll sound just like CNBC.
I mean, it's the new, you know, it's the new magic wand, but obviously it has, I'm a big science fiction fan, and if you read any of the culture, they're called the Culture series, very dense books by a British science fiction author, but they talk about the rise of this stuff and what it ultimately means, and I think that's sort of where everybody thinks this is headed, and yet we've seen very, very clear examples of a huge corporate push, and Google is the one that comes to mind immediately because it was so blatantly you know, racist and sexist and everything else. We've seen a major EI or AI push by a corporate, huge corporate sponsor that pumped out an AI product that was totally useless. And not just useless, scary useless. So, I mean, if you put, you know, garbage in, garbage out. If you put your trust into some corporate entity to produce an AI system, You have to do so with the understanding that you are buying into whatever bias, whatever political intrigue, whatever cultural focus the people who design that thing for that company have. And if you don't give, that's why I said you can't just walk in and say, okay, this is an AI system I'm going to use.
You're talking about logic and technology. I'm talking about hype. AI.
I mean, if you want to do that, yeah, that's great.
I missed the part about the cloud. I missed that because I could have said, you have any idea that our investment ideas are not only here in the office, but we got them on the cloud.
I mean, your clientele, if you've got people that are that.
No, my people would never believe it, but
unsophisticated.
Oh yeah.
They're a little bit like some of the general officers I dealt with back in the day who would hear the technology, siren song. You know, this weapon will do this. This weapon will do that. This thing will do this. This thing will do that, and just bought into it willy nilly.
Well, now people are buying NVIDIA stock as we speak. Do they have any idea what AI even is?
No. Well, no, that kind of thing, no, because you and I have talked about how the stock market isn't a measure of necessarily smart investment. It's a measure, in large part, of an emotional investment.
That sounds like old Morse code.
What does it say?
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger.
There you go.
What was that? Lost in space. In Morse code?
Well, that was the computer. Somebody was trying to send stuff in Morse code, and the computer recognized it.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger.
That's pretty funny. I didn't recognize the voices from the TV series.
Hey, I got another question. Before we get started on good stuff, I have a question for you. What is the deal with this? I don't know if you're reading about the Chicago news, but the appellate court just reversed the lower court's ruling on this thing on the ballot regarding forcing people that have $1 million house or a building, I guess, really, to pay some huge transfer tax, allegedly for housing low-income people, without any requirement whatsoever that our whatever he is, mayor, actually take this money and put it someplace where it's only used for that. I mean, I'm sure there's, it actually probably allows him to spend it wherever he damn well pleases. Why, I don't understand how our judges could be this, I'm not going to call anybody dumb or anything, but where does this end? I mean, democracy is a very, and you know more about the ins and outs of it than me, democracy is a very tender product. I mean, I know I say it all the time, and it's not really a joke. You can't have four wolves and a hen voting what they have for breakfast. I mean, how does this? What if I were to put a referendum on there that says we think that anybody who's never had a job at age 25 and who has had two kids out of wedlock or something, if they don't have a job in 4 months, you get out of the hell of the city. We're going to kick you out. I bet that wins too, but that's not right.
My response to that is that the limitations on this kind of stuff are found in our Constitution and the case law that's developed from it and the amendments that have developed from it. And if you don't bump up against that, or the Illinois state constitution, and if you don't bump up against that, you get to be as stupid as you want.
Well, it bumps up into this home rule thing. And what how does that obfuscate everything you just said? If it's home rule, you get to be idiots and not have any concept of what the Constitution says?
Well, if it's home rule, as I understand it in Illinois, and it's been a long time since I looked at this, you get jurisdictions like Chicago get a lot of autonomy from state legislative requirements on spending or tax authority or things like this. And so unless you're bumping up against an Illinois constitutional principle such as a taking by the state without compensation or some federal constitutional issue, unless you bump up against that or some other statute, the court's going to say, yeah, have at it, do your thing.
Well, if you combine a lot of the stuff we say on the show together, if we have whoever the next person in the Oval Office is, the same person or the new old guy, if they take the same monetary policy we have now, in the next 10 years, everything is going to double. So that means everybody now with a $500,000 house is going to be paying. The house will now be $1 million, even though it won't be worth any more than it is now.
Yeah, and your income won't keep up.
I'm paying now, all of a sudden, they will be paying this huge new transfer tax. And again, I think the mayor is as incapable for the job as I think he is. Has probably figured out that inflation is the best thing to happen to government. So this number really will become 750 in 5 years and 500 in 10 years. And then 40 years from now, every house will be $1 million.
Right. You know, you're not going to get any argument from me. And this is, again, a court's not going to come in and stop that. A court's going to say, did you pass the law properly?
Where does it end? What if the city was 80% white and black and didn't want in, and 20% Hispanic? Could we vote to have all the Hispanics move out?
No. Because that would violate the 14th Amendment. So you can't do that. I mean, the solution for what's happening in Chicago is the ballot box, and you know,
I think the solution for individual people is to leave.
That's probably correct. But you guys voted in this idiot.
I didn't, don't accuse me of that. I didn't.
Well, I'm using the collective guys of the Chicago residents. You voted this guy in. And so at some point, I guess, the residents of Chicago that are still there will reach their threshold of pain and they'll look around and say, we got to get somebody else.
Well, we have a rabble rouser for the teachers union that thinks all other people's money belongs to him and his gang. Okay, but if you say that's not really true, it shouldn't be racist for me to say that sucks.
It is. It does suck, but there's no surprise to that. This guy was you guys listening to the interviews. I followed that campaign because I was interested in Paul Vallis. You guys had every indication of what kind of person this was being elected, and you voted for him anyway. And when I say that, I don't mean necessarily character. I mean priorities. I mean, just general intellectual capacity. And I mean, it was all out there plain for everybody to see.
Okay, but a lot of this is money and organization. The teachers union gave the man a gross amount of money, which is a public union, becomes this politically, I can see it because it's all about them. And they actually worked the polls for the guy.
Yep.
And you had what was the voter turnout? 30%? 25%?
Yep.
I mean, so for some reason the other people don't care, or they think it's racist to vote against them, or something's wrong. The democratic system is not working.
You've got the same problem there in Chicago that they're having right now in New York, in New York City, which is after this latest attack on Donald Trump. By the way, that jackass prosecutor, a district attorney in New York City, is going after, or in New York State, is going after another large company on the grounds that they've promised to make their emissions X by 2040. And she says, they're not going to be able to do that. That's fraud. I'm suing them now under the same statute. New York has got a business exodus going. And that's what's going to happen in Chicago. You're going to hollow out, as you said. People are going to leave. You know, individual businesses are going to be making, you know, the wisdom of the crowd. People are going to leave. Businesses are going to shutter. They're going to depart. And at some point, somebody is going to look around. I mean, this is happening in San Francisco right now. The mayor is now looking around saying, you know what? I guess it's not a good idea to have homeless drug addicts who are insane wandering the streets, breaking into cars, and it's not a good idea.
The point is, you have worldwide experience more than me, but I'll tell you this. When you get a Pullman to leave, they never come back.
Those people
are gone, the machines are gone, the building's gone. It's a flat field. They don't ever come back.
Yeah, and so, again, you guys are electing people like this. I mean, here in Denver, we had a totally ineffective mayor who allowed the downtown to deteriorate, I think there's enough intelligence in the city and in the city leadership now to look around and say, we can't allow the downtown to go. And so we're seeing some pushback here. Of course, that is greatly complicated by the fact that the city has had, I don't know, 8,000, 10,000.
I got a good sound clip for you guys. If
ask
you wanna.
Another question. You know what the headlines are going to say.
This is Stacey Davis Gates.
You know, people who have a scientific calculator get done with it. They're going to say these are great proposals and can't nobody pay for it. And CTU with all of this, that, and the other. And who's going to pay for it, Stacey? Stop asking that question. Ask another question.
Yeah.
That's the head of the teachers union, by the way.
Yep.
After saying
yep.
they want $50 billion.
I mean, again, you have, by the way, I heard about that press conference or that speech she gave at the Chicago Club or whatever it was, and nobody stood up and asked her, what are we getting for this money? Because you people can't teach, and your students are shooting each other, and what are we getting for this money?
Doesn't anyway, matter. It's always more. You know.
This is the kind of thing that drives you crazy. But the short answer is, you have a stupendously ignorant, apathetic public, and chief, they just you haven't reached their threshold of pain.
But you're talking about. Here's the thing, the teachers union. The last two or three heads of the teachers union have been African American. The first lady who was, she kind of looked the Angela Davis part. She's a brilliant lady. I mean, the one who got the brain cancer and had to quit. I really liked her. I mean, she went to Harvard, for God's sake. I mean, she was no dummy. She knew her numbers. She wasn't anything like this lady.
Well,
disagree.
She's gone.
Well, yeah, I think she died.
The union elected somebody else. And you know that person.
But the attitude is everybody else's money is mine, and even if I've never worked a day in my life, somehow I deserve a. How do we ever get that way? Nobody thought that way years ago.
I'm not sure about that. But regardless, I don't have an answer for you except to say that the electorate is greatly susceptible to apparently these kinds of pitches. And the pushback to this kind of mentality is reflected in a move to more populist candidates.
What all you would have needed at the last election was like 2% higher vote total. They don't win by very much.
No, but they don't have to. They'll win. I mean, since I actually believe there was a fair amount of ballot stuffing going on in places like Pennsylvania and Michigan and Wisconsin. I think they'll win by what they need to win by, but that's another,
well,
that's another story.
I'm going to say that both parties will do whatever they can to stuff the ballots or stop people that are going to vote for them against them from showing up. And it's not just one or the other.
I would say that there's a much better ballot stuffing and lawfare capability on the side of the Democrats right now.
Okay, so what difference does it make? What possible difference does it make because of the ridiculous Electoral College? You can stuff the ballots all you want in California and have every single person vote for Biden, even if obviously they're not.
Got to listen to what I said. I said Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin.
All right.
Those are swing states. And I think you saw, well, in Pennsylvania, you saw definitely an unconstitutional move by the state Supreme Court. But the point is, what you're asking for is a fix. That is a systemic fix long term, which is you have to have a better educated public, you have to have a smarter electorate, and who can look at this and say, the long term implications of the guy we're voting for here are terrible, and I'm not talking just about Chicago, the selection of somebody like Donald Trump. Was a reflexive reaction against people who, like you, were looking around and going, this isn't working.
No, it's not.
And this is the
except for the fact that the guy was a president. It didn't work when he was there either.
No, this is, I'm talking 2016. The cost of this is coming down on my back. Nobody is listening to my concerns. I'm going to vote for the bomb thrower because the whole, you know, I could make a reasonably good case that the candidate that we need is one who is going to come in and systematically decapitate the leadership, figuratively, of almost every federal agency.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Okay. You and I are on the same page. That kind of person tends to be a populist who is going to, you know, be a threat to every single entrenched interest. And that's what Donald Trump is. That's why you're seeing the lawfare against him. And he, as imperfect as he is, and Lord knows he is, he's offering that kind of alternative.
Except that's why I think the first time he took a lot of favor. But I was, I mean, as I think most people know, for the last 30 years of my life, I would love to have seen somebody flying in from the outside, a Donald Trump-like person, somebody who, once he got in there, was effective and could actually speak about his way was the better way, get people to agree with him, not just throw barbs around every day and have 4 years of chaos and just be out. He was not effective.
Well, let's start with a couple of points. Number one, he was subject to a coup attempt.
Well, I mean,
even before he was elected.
Everybody knows that. If you're going to go in hating the bureaucracy is not going to like you very much.
Well, I don't think everybody knew what was actually happening to him. But I thought, given what he was subjected to, he was effective with McConnell and some of the other House leadership. I fault them for not dealing with health care, which they had been screaming about for two terms. But he did get some stuff done.
Well, on a very small level, Lou. And I ran against the nominated slate for the CBOE, and we won by a landslide. If I could have taped that first board meeting with the people looking at us like, what are we going to expect from these guys? Are they going to be like rabble rousers? The air in the room, you could have cut it with a knife. And this is a board of an exchange, not the U.S. government. Of course, when you go in like that, like a bull in a china shop, at some point you have to get people on your side. You can't remain bull.
But wait a minute. You just agreed with me that the guy we want as president, the next guy we want as president, is a guy who's going to come in and decapitate the leadership of these federal agencies.
Except not him. S&P futures up 14. NASDAQ futures. Lou, I'm with you. If you went in, I'd be right by your side, bud. Not him. I have people that are close to me thinking the guy is a big pusher for the middle class, and the person close to me is in real estate. He never paid a real estate person in his life. He stiffed everybody. I mean, the guy has stiffed everybody. Whatever. S&P futures up 14. NASDAQ futures 85. Yes, I would love a Donald Trump-like person, just not him.
But you're not going to get him because the system, as you noted,
system will not. It won't. It buried Elliot Spitzer. It buried the guy running against Obama. The people they bury. By the way, I don't know if you listen to the show. That's been kind of a theme lately. Not just the people who run, the people who are told not to run. Who tells them not to run? Even Tom Dart went out to Washington and talked to him about becoming mayor. He came back here and said he's out. Tom Dart's a very effective guy, a real smart guy.
I mean, you saw if you follow Arizona politics at all, you saw this happen with Carrie Lake, who is a Trumper, but she was told by the head of the Republican committee in Arizona, you know, you can't run. How much money would it take to get to buy you out?
Yeah, basically.
I mean, literally told that.
We'll be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Rick Pappas on the board. S&P futures up 13.75. NASDAQ futures up 84. Dow futures up 57. Over in Europe, we have the little bit higher. These guys have been really tepid the last couple days. DAX up 17.1%. FTSE down 1, call that flat. CAC around up 14.2%. The ECB rate decision is, I believe, today. So we'll see how that goes. Over in Asia, the Nikkei down 492, that's 1.2%, so they're back under 40,000. That's surprising. Hang Seng down 208, 1.2%, still hanging above 16,000, 16,229. Shanghai down 12.4%. So I'll say the Japanese have managed to pump their market up pretty good. The Chinese, not so much. Even though they continue to be trying, I guess. Yesterday, Dow was up 75, S&P up 26, NASDAQ up 91. We were up an awful lot more than that 2 hours before the close. We were up maybe at least half, maybe even two-thirds of where the sell-off the day before, and then kind of limped into the close a little bit. Bonds unchanged, 4.11. The Bund down 2 basis points, 2.31. Japan up 3.75. I'm going to say that's as high as it's been in quite a while. And we have oil. Down 48 cents, 78.65, so reasonably below 80 here. Brent down 47 cents, 82.49. Natural gas up a penny, 1.94. Arbob unchanged, 2.54. The U.S. dollar, 108.9 on the euro, so euro's actually up a little bit. Same thing with the pound, 127.5, so dollar's down a little bit against both of those, not much. Gold, which has been on an absolute tear, is up again today, 590, 21.64. Remember how this thing was absolutely mired at 2030 for seemingly weeks, and all of a sudden that's up 130 this week. Silver down 12 cents, 24.37. Silver is not keeping up with gold. Copper up 5 cents, 392. We've got Bitcoin down 338, 66,857, still at a very high level. Greg, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning, everyone. 637 here in Chicago, 38 degrees right now, 48 degrees today, clouds with some limiting sun, possible rain. 55 in Phoenix, variable clouds with rain after 9 a.m. there, especially during the afternoon hours, so bring your umbrella. NBA, Bulls win at Jazz, that was 119-117.
Good game.
Yeah, Northwestern loses at Michigan State, that was 49-53. Traffic, Kennedy from Montrose is 10 minutes, Edens from Lake Cook, 23 minutes, Ike from Wolf to the Interchange, 25 minutes, inbound Ryan is 23 minutes, that's from 95th to the Interchange, and then the Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan is 30 minutes. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Lou, have you ever been to ever the Auburn Duesenberg Cord Museum?
No, I've never been there.
If you're ever hanging around northeast Indiana, it is absolutely worth a trip, like a day, a day. It is absolutely spectacular. It's in Auburn, Indiana, go figure. And that's where they used to make the Auburns, the Duesenbergs, and the Cords, right? Which were probably, without question, the most incredible cars ever made in America. I'm going to say, what do you think that if Greg were to go down the block tonight in a Doozy or an Auburn, that he would have girls knocking on his window?
He'd probably get carjacked within two blocks.
Well, that's another problem, yeah. anyway.
Let me throw out a topic, because this is something that just popped up on my radar yesterday. So you're always looking at investment trends or defense trends. We are apparently, so we've been engaged in the hypersonic missile technology push for many years, and we were the leaders until probably about 10, 15 years ago. The Russians and the Chinese have caught up. We were testing something called an ARRW, ARRW, air-launched hypersonic missile, and we couldn't get the thing to work. So a year ago, the Air Force announced that it was basically abandoning this kind of technology and going to go in favor of the difference is a hypersonic glide vehicle versus a hypersonic cruise missile. The glide vehicle follows a sort of a ballistic trajectory, but is maneuverable. The cruise missile stays hypersonic.
It's powered the whole way. It's not.
So lo and behold, last week, a B-52 arrives out on our base at Guam at Anderson Air Force Base, and it's got one of these arrows strapped to its wing. And it's not an experimental one. It's an operational one, at least according to the Air Force. And it looks like they're going to shoot it in, they've closed a huge section of the Western Pacific test range to air traffic. And it looks like they're taking this thing up and going to shoot it out over the test range. This is, I mean, I don't think I've ever heard of a situation where the Air Force has said, we're abandoning this contract and this proposal in favor of another system. And then a year later, we trot out one of these things that is supposedly operational. And I mean, we may be blowing smoke. We're doing this very publicly. They landed it at Guam. They were training. It was landed there ostensibly for...
What's it supposed to hit, airplanes or ships or land?
It hit surface targets.
Okay.
And, you know, it's small. It's not going to carry it's not designed to carry a nuclear warhead. It's a conventional hit. But, you know, I don't know how big the thing is, probably a couple of hundred pounds. But if it maintains a Mach 5 or close to it closing speed, you know, whether you've got, you know, the effectively a hand grenade on the thing, something weighing several hundred pounds going that fast hitting anything.
It could be a Civil War cannonball going that fast.
Well, yeah, it could be your pen.
Yeah.
Going that fast, it's gonna do a tremendous amount of damage. Anyway, the point is, this was a weapon system we had shut down and it had basically closed off, and all of a sudden we apparently have an operational version of
Maybe it.
Maybe
it wasn't really shut down though.
Well. Or we're blowing smoke. I can't tell which.
It was a lie at one end or the other. The question is which.
Well, the other interesting thing about this, of course, is that we're testing it sort of on China, not in China's back door, but much closer to China than we normally run these tests. Normally, we run these things off the coast of California. It may be that they want a larger test range. It may be they want to be, you know, fairly remote, although.
Well, it might be that they heard the speech the other day about 7% of the GDP is going for defense in China.
Could be. I mean, we finally woke up to that. Well, you know those emails I send you from Commander Salamander. That guy's a realist about expenses and capabilities. But it's just particularly noteworthy that we're rolling this thing out right now. And I was fascinated while listening to the reports on it. They were doing supposedly operational training and doctrine discussion. So this is it's ironic. So you literally have probably the newest weapon in our entire inventory, if in fact we're rolling this thing out, strapped to what has to be the oldest airplane flying for us right now, the B-52, and that the 52s are apparently the launch pads.
Yeah, does the B-52 have any parts that it had when it was produced, other than maybe the fuselage?
I don't think the airframe has been completely replaced. Obviously, the main frame has not been completely replaced. There are, like as with the KC-135s, the air refuelers, there are miles and miles and miles of wiring in there that don't serve any purpose anymore, that are basically dead. They don't pull all that stuff out of there when they do an upgrade. So, but again, my point is this. This is a weapon system that we had abandoned, ostensibly.
Can a current B-52 still act as a regular bomber? Or is, yep, all that stuff gone?
No, it can still act as a regular bomber, but it's not survivable in any kind of modern air defense environment. So what it's designed to do now is carry a huge payload of standoff weapons. Or as one of my instructors said, if you want to destroy a target on the ground, you don't necessarily need an airplane that can fly over and drop a bomb on it. You need a bomb that can navigate its way there, that can be released, 150, 200 miles away, and can fly itself to the target. And that's what we're getting. But again, just a side note. That's a technology push that is going to be big, because air defense systems are getting better and better and better, and stealth is only good up to a point with these things.
Well, Lou, we keep seeming like we're switching topics, but we're not. We're on the same topic. If China's somewhat of a threat, by the way, just my final comment on the Trump situation. Everybody knows I don't like the man. This legal thing everybody's putting him through. I can't imagine that happening to anybody. And the guy is still a citizen here. I can't imagine everybody, whenever they can, taking a legal pot shot at somebody. What do you suppose this lady in New York's, what percentage of the budget in her place is going after Trump? And who the hell put, same thing here, what percentage of the guys here, of his budget, went to putting Blagojevich in jail? What, 80%, 70%?
Yeah,
I mean, that's wrong.
Look at Atlanta. Look at what's happening in Atlanta.
Yeah, it's wrong. By the way, in the business I'm in, if anybody gets a problem as a securities firm, every state will pile on.
Yeah.
And if there's money there, if your name can be had or there's money to be had, it has nothing to do with regulation and protecting people. It has all to do with self-aggrandizement and money.
Well, in your business, yes. In this particular business, this is targeting a particular individual with a series of what I think will ultimately prove to be unconstitutional means. I mean, the Colorado Supreme Court, how stupid do they look? Well, they look pretty stupid already because of the Masterpiece Cake Shop debacle. But this is Trump's great skill is revelation. He reveals people. People reveal themselves going after him. And we see now that the elites, I mean,
these people aren't elites. I don't know what they are.
Well, yeah, they are. They are. These are.
They
our
think
elites.
They are.
These are our power brokers. You know, they have feet of clay. I mean, this Lonnie Willis thing
but
in
how,
Atlanta.
How do they not know, Lou, that the last thing you want to do to somebody who's becoming a martyr is go after him again? They're defeating their own purpose.
They don't think this way, and they don't look this way, and to a certain extent.
Yeah, but I mean, that's only common sense. That's just knowing humans.
To a certain extent, they believe that by attacking Trump, if he's the nominee, they have a ready-made, attack plan for him, and they can energize their base. At the same time, they cripple his ability to campaign. The idea, and there's a Democratic Congressman Raskin, who is leading the charge on drafting a statute that would effectively remove, I think, several hundred Republicans from ballot consideration. I mean, that's the most anti-democratic thing I've ever heard of in my life.
Oh, without a doubt.
Who are these people? And
democracy is the best thing in the world for the other person, Lou, not for
apparently so.
Like antitrust. Competition is the greatest thing for every industry but mine.
That's right. Well, and they figured out with jurisdictions like New York City and like Washington D.C., if they can get the case brought there, they have a win regardless of how ridiculous the charge. And the January 6th defendants are, well, the thing, are a classic example.
If you want to give me 30 seconds to talk, my, to finish my Auburn story, it had nothing to do with cars or Greg getting girlfriends. It had to do with a thriving place in Northeast Indiana, where everybody from the farm is now working in a factory, and it, these guys are craftsmen. We're not talking about, I mean, you've seen a Duesenberg or an Auburn. I mean, they were craftsmen. And all of a, and I think the numbers were, it's been a while since I've been there, 1929, before the Depression, I think they did 15,000 cars or some number like that. These are real cars. And and 2 years into the Depression, they were down to like 2,500 or something. So the place closes up, never to come back again. Well, the factory is now a museum. These people went back to their farms. Who knows if they got foreclosed, what the hell happened to them. The idea that somebody can bleep up for 4 or 8 years in a city or a state or even in the White House, and it'll all be okay 10 years from now. We're resilient, but we're not that resilient. It takes years and years of human capital and in regular capital to have these industries together. I mean, I once in a while, I talk about my nephew's place, and they have a metal working facility on the south side. And they basically do parts for other metal working facilities. When some of the stuff started to come back from China, and all of a sudden a few places started to pick up, it's not just them. Oh my God, this machine, we just got another order. We used to have two machines, now we only have one working. Okay, we need the other one working. And then we go to my nephew's place and say, well, for the other one to work, we need two conveyor belts, these 10 parts. And they go, well, that's cool. You're the third person here today. You got to wait 6 months. I mean, this is to screw up at that level. I don't think people realize how big of a screw-up it is. I mean, if you lose Chicago, you lose all the rail, all the ability to move people, for all the idiots that want to get rid of automobiles. You lose Chicago, you lose half a million people on the rails every day and get back in cars somewhere in Utah or someplace. I mean, these are massive losses economically.
I agree with you. And the idea, but more importantly, what they're destroying is not just these industries in the short term. They are destroying the expectation,
right,
that capital has, that if I put money into this project in this place, it can prosper. If you destroy that, then you die. Then you're,
well, also, why would I put a business here, despite what the teachers union says? If I'm going to, the human capital, well, there's a lot of good schools in Chicago, obviously. The human capital, you're not building it here in the Chicago public schools. Now, whether, I think, though, Lou, to blame the teachers and that, it's a destruction of huge neighborhoods. If you don't have any family, you got no school. I mean, you know,
I'm gonna point the finger at the teachers union as well, because I've seen some of your teachers.
This is I'm gonna say 30 years ago. And my brother's wife, she was a sub teacher for a while, and then she didn't want to do that anymore. She's now works for all these history museums and stuff, and really knows a lot of stuff. But nice lady. Anyway, she was a sub teacher, and she went to St. Bernadette's, went to Catholic school, and where, you know, pretty much everybody had a family, and there was some discipline around. She goes, the week that, first of all, I never knew a teacher that took a day off unless they were like half dead. She goes, people take a week off sick when it's the week you're supposed to teach like sex education or something. So they don't want to teach that week, so they take the week off. So she gets that week, and she's teaching sex education. And she goes, all of a sudden some kid's a total bleep. So you call home. First of all, you tell the kid, hey, I'm going to call home. Okay, go ahead, call home. Right? Well, now, I would never have said that. I doubt if you would have either, because that would not have been a good call. And then she calls home. Nobody answers the phone, or else it's the boyfriend sleeping. What'd you wake me up for? The wife's working, and I don't give a crap about the kid. She goes, the phone calls are something she never even dreamed. And this is a long time. Can you imagine today?
I read the reports. I've read the individual anecdotes. Yeah, I mean it, but my the issue is it, there's two issues. First of all, the fastest, if I was the mayor of Chicago, the fastest thing I would do, or the first thing I would do, is I would push for charter schools, and I would push for school choice. I would get the funding changed from neighborhood funding going to schools to funding going to individual students and their families. And
you're talking about the Canadian system.
Well, I'm talking about the system they've got in a number of places in the United States. They have charter schools here. Go through there. No. Not charter. This is not a charter school issue now. This is funding. You basically tell parents and you tell your educational establishment, we are no longer going to fund school buildings. We're going to fund by student. So if you want to get money, you've got to bring the students in. And if you're not doing that, then you're going down.
It's actually very simple in the word is, Lou. The charter school situation right now, there's a number that follows the kid to every public school. That's why the teachers union can't stand a charter school. If your kid goes to the charter school, that same amount of cash follows you to the, I think it's the same amount, follows you to the charter school, but the building allowance is a separate budget. They don't get that. So if you're going to Kelly High School here in Chicago and you show up day one, 25 grand or 18 or whatever number happens to be, I think it's like 25, maybe even more. 25 grand goes to Kelly High School for you. Okay, but it doesn't. The budget to maintain Kelly High School, the building, is separate. So if that kid goes to a charter school, the 25 grand follows him.
But follows him.
But you and I have to put up the building.
I think that's the way to do it, or at least in part that's the way.
But now who's going to put up the building? You and me. In some areas they have.
And I'm just saying, there has to be more competition to break the stranglehold that the unions have on the educational product that's coming out of the schools. And we can't go in and take the families under control. All right, unless you're going to reinstate orphanages, which.
Well, you might want to be able to corral the daddies leaving their trophies around the neighborhood and say, by the way, you're going to work for the state for a while in jail at a real job, and we're going to send the money home or something.
I would be in favor of some kind of deadbeat dad enforcement setup. We started approaching debtors' prison issues with that. But
you know what?
But I would be in favor.
I got a quick question for you regarding the charter stuff. Why? I mean, obviously, I'm a product of Catholic schools. Why can't a Catholic school set itself up as a charter school and just have the religion classes in the church that are voluntary? Why does a Catholic school get nothing? Why aren't they the same as a charter school?
I don't know what the state law is, but Catholic schools are anathema to any kind of unionized workforce.
I'm saying. I don't know. The charter school teachers are unionized, are they?
Some of them are. There was a push before. I left Chicago. There was a big push to unionize them and try to bring them into the CTU. The Catholic schools traditionally are separate and apart from this, and I think a very effective way of funding alternative education would be to simply say, fine, if you want to send your kid to a Catholic school, that money follows him there.
You could send like $5,000 and none of them would close.
Yeah. I mean that would make perfect sense.
One of my friends and he.
So quick question. No, quick question for you. Why were Catholic schools originally established? They were established in the middle 1800s in the United States. Why?
I have no idea why. I mean, what the first reason was. I mean, a lot of them had nuns teaching, which didn't cost anything. Which is, I don't know about that, but. I don't know what the connection was.
They were set up originally because in the mainstream United States public education system, the children were being bombarded with Protestant religious lessons, Protestant religious instruction, Protestant religious
in the public schools. So it wasn't a separation of church and state. It was a separation of religions. Okay.
Exactly. So you got a large influx of Catholic immigrants into the United States around this time, and they said, we're not sending our kids there. They're being taught the ways of the devil. Religious doctrine being what it was back then. They're being taught the ways of the devil, and we are going to pull them out. And so Catholic schools were established in large part to deal with the mandatory religious indoctrination that was happening in American public schools in the 1800s.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. I read that some point back when I was looking at education.
Well, now, did that follow all the way, was Chicago privy to that, or was that all an East Coast thing?
It was mostly an East Coast thing. They were established, I think, in New York first. and then you know, it even in especially poor neighborhoods, it became very clear that if you wanted to get your kid a decent education, then you send him to Catholic school.
Oh, no doubt.
My father, my grandparents on my father's side scraped, you know, to afford Catholic school for my father and his brothers and sister. And it was because there was absolutely no question in their mind that their kid was going to go to a public school.
Why?
It was a disaster.
Why? I mean, as I recall, and I have reasonable memory, even today in some of the Southside Catholic schools, I think St. John Fisher, when I went there, I'm going to say 200 a year for me, 125 for my brother. If there'd have been a third, it was 75, and anybody else after that was free. So I don't know if anybody really had to scrape too much to go there.
If you were going to school in the Great Depression, it was
maybe, yeah,
they were scraping. But that's been the way it has been for ages. Catholic schools produce a better product, and you're seeing a move to homeschooling now here too. I mean, I'm trying to remember the figure, but I think it was something like close to 700,000 kids in the United States,
yeah,
have been pulled out of public school in the last year, just the last year, because of what's going on there in terms of indoctrination.
Well, the COVID teaching started that too. We put a push.
This is the last year. Nobody was afraid of COVID. Well, they were afraid of COVID because of the way the schools responded to it. But now most of this is a result of political indoctrination issues.
Well, Lou, we can't even cover all the topics, much less come to solutions in an hour anymore.
No. Too many rabbit holes.
It's the same rabbit hole, really.
That's probably true. Lots of snow out here in Colorado.
Are you going to ski?
Starting tonight. I won't be up there skiing. I've got court appearances bracketing the weekend, so I'll be here.
What did you do? Why are you in court?
Oh no, I'm in court not as a defendant.
Ah, okay. Did you ski at all this year?
No, I don't think I haven't gotten up there. I'm going to try, see if I can get up there maybe in April.
There you go.
Before they shut down.
Well, be careful.
There's plenty of snow.
What's the snowpack?
I think we're like 120%.
So it's going to be right another now. Good year for Lake Mead, hopefully.
Yes, we'll see.
All right, SP Futures up 12. NASDAQ Futures up 76. Be right back, Mr. Dan Janitas.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call, 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Yeah!
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Greg Pappas on the board. S&P futures up 1150. NASDAQ futures up 72. We were down that last night, and then we were up a lot more than this when we came in. So now we're kind of heading back toward the flat line a little bit here, but still up after that huge down day on Tuesday. So we're trying to claw back and get back at least most of that, trying to get most of that back. Do we have Professor Dan?
I'm here.
How are you, buddy?
Yes. How are you? How are you?
All right, what's a good word? We have questions. People are trying to put money in treasuries. What are you thinking, 3 or 6 or 2?
You mean 2 year?
No, two month.
Oh, 2 month. Oh, and the T-bills. T-bills should still be overweighted, absolutely. There's been all this talk about the Fed cutting rates, and we don't see that happening anytime soon. You know, I listened to Jerome Powell's testimony yesterday, and they're, you know, they seem to be consistent in what they're saying and waiting until we see inflation come down more before doing anything. I mean, he did indicate that it's likely that there'll be some cuts later in the year, but here's where we're at, Chief. If you buy T-bills and you're getting a really good rate on them, if rates get cut, that's only good news for you. Any bond, whether it be a 1 month T-bill or a 30-year bond, is going to benefit when interest rates come down, because the price of that bond or that T-bill or that treasury note is going to go up. So we would still recommend an overweight. It does change week to week in terms of where in the very short curve. It makes sense, but anything from 1 month, 2 month, 3 month are looking more attractive right now than the longer. So, you know, I'd rather be in the 2 month or 3 month. We think rates are going to continue to, you're going to continue to get paid, 5.5%, even more. It's kind of a no-brainer, and especially when you compare it to corporate bonds, for example, which are overvalued right now. They're rich, they're expensive. The spread, the additional yield you get from holding that is probably you get compensated for the risk, but you're not getting that much more yield. So I would say stay in the 1 month, 2 month, 3 month T-bills for now. We don't expect any changes to interest rates in the near future. If something happens, it's going to come later this year. Some of the numbers that came out this week indicate that the U.S. economy has been more resilient to higher interest rates than was originally expected. So we see that the consumer is still strong. Target's earnings came out earlier this week, stronger than expected. They had a nice bump in the price of the stock. So right now we're in pretty good shape with the economy, and I don't see that the Fed sees any reason to start cutting rates anytime soon.
I know that's where you're coming from on this, and I think if you look at the gross numbers, you're absolutely correct. I just honestly think that the gross numbers now, you can't even believe them, because they're so involved into the upper 5% of the economy that you can't use the gross numbers. Now, Target is different, right? Because, I mean, they don't necessarily cater to the top 1%.
Right.
But even then, I got to believe that the prices, if you were to ask Target whether the actual, they sell so many different things, I'm going to say that their price increases are more than their increases in sales in the last year.
That I would say that's true.
And that to me is not a sign of health. It is if you're in power and you want to tell people how good things are. But in reality, hey, did you get a chance to? I don't want to beat this one up too much more this week, but I'm still kind of stunned about it, Dan. We talked on Tuesday, I believe, really quite a while, about the Michelle Fox article on CNBC. I know I sent it to you, I think, or maybe I didn't, but where she was talking about the federal deficit going up $1 trillion every 100 days now. And we talked about it and how this is, I think one of the issues that I've been concerned about, because obviously, I've been concerned about the economy for a long time, because I watch the money supply numbers and I see it. I've been out of hand really for certainly since 2007. And I just wonder where's the breaking point? And I've been early for like what, a decade? I mean, duh. I look at it. First of all, the response has been different. The response of having a problem with too much money in my day was we're bringing Paul Volcker and have less money. Well, now it's actually go even further. The only way we can bury this problem is by even more money. And oh, by the way, let's get the rest of the world to do it with us, which is really kind of what they're doing. But I'm sitting there going, this can't be right. I mean, I know when you pull up the debt clock, Dan. I don't know if you're ever crazy enough to do that. You see the numbers spinning pretty fast. Okay, but then you and I, once in a while, we go through the monthly treasury statement, and we say, here's the numbers. And our man Greg, our producer, he's the one that kind of clued me into this. That when Greg started first doing stuff with us like a year ago, just for grins, he got the stopwatch out and he clocked how long it took for the government to blow through $1 million in the debt. And Greg, was it like 44 seconds or something? And then for yucks even more, like 8 months later he did it and it was like 34. So it was getting worse. So I got the feeling that somehow or another the deficit is growing faster than your, in my world, I said it 3 days in a row, if the Dan Janitas household spends, you know, $500,000 one year because you got four kids in school and you only made $400,000, which is a horrible year for you, I know, Dan. The other $100,000 is going to come out of savings or you borrowed it, right? I mean, there's no two ways about it. It either comes out of some place that you saved, which hopefully you did, or you have to borrow it. So when you look at the Fed's numbers, if they're $600 billion in debt last year, I would sort of expect the borrowing to be up $600 billion, because obviously you didn't tax it, and you didn't, and, you know, so, but evidently it's growing a lot faster than that. And so Carl came out and talked about something, you ever heard of, budgettothepenny.org or something, or some other site where the government actually, that's where this Michelle Fox got the numbers, and they're legit, that there's somehow or another, there's borrowing that never makes it to the monthly treasury statement. It's just spent.
I absolutely believe that. And I do think it's a much bigger problem. I do think it's been glossed over by a lot of economists, or at least it hasn't been like one of the primary talking points amongst economists. It seems to be ignored. And I think part of the reason it's being ignored in the media this year is because of the election that's coming up. So there's almost a, you know, if you believe, and I do believe to a certain extent, that there's a certain amount of, you know, the caution in actually talking about those numbers, because they're concerning. As you mentioned too, one of the things that I had, you know, that I had written down is to talk about the, you know, the fact that fiscal stimulus is still being pumped into the system, and this is not going to help things. There has to be some place. It's the same concept if you think about the household racking up credit card debt. So the two are parallel, but the deficit is really out of control at this point, and it will at some point catch up with us. And it just that, you know, there seems to be this the continued not paying attention to it, not really focused on how to improve it. You know, I don't know whether that happens with the change of administration. I doubt it with the two candidates that are coming. That's not going to be the focus. It has been the focus, as you know, from history, with some of the administrations over the years. It is important, and it is a concern, and I think it does need to be, you know, considered.
The last week I looked at, I didn't even look at the third one Audrey brought up to me. If you look at consumer debt, it's not just growing, it's going straight up. I mean, we're past the stage. Same way with the federal government debt, and what I understand, auto loan now debt is doing the same thing. I mean, we're not going from, you know, growing 2% a month, 3% a month. We're talking about a vertical line, for God's sake.
Absolutely, and there's no question this is a concern, Chief. And it's really great that you're pointing this out, because I think it's, I don't know if I want to use the word denial, but it's certainly something that has not been discussed by the media, by economists. You really don't hear much when you listen to the testimony of Powell, the Fed chair, or when you listen to any type of discussion on what's going on with, you know, with the economy of the Federal Reserve, this is always a back burner issue, but it needs to become a front burner issue, and there needs to be some sort of plan or strategy to deal with it. This is, you know, the, like you said, people are shifting away from, you know, just using their income to pay their bills towards using credit cards, towards using savings, and even in many cases, and I'm not sure you've seen this, but we've certainly seen this with clients, just paying bills off of their IRA accounts, so, or the new purchases, and that's part of what it's for as you get into retirement, but there is a shift, it is a noticeable shift over the past several years towards this these alternative sources of capitals besides income. And that issue is going to continue to.
Well, Dan, what has, when we start seeing in the last week or two, I mean, we talked to you last week. In the last week or two, you've seen, well, not today, it was Donald, but you've seen China saying that they're going to push their market up. It was getting too low. Japan obviously is doing the same thing.
Japan is raising rates. BOJ is raising.
But I'm saying that, but somehow or another, they're putting money in a system.
Yes.
And which is, again, even our stuff now. The you can look at the money supply and see that it's kind of stayed steady. I don't know that's even an indication, Dan, because we were so egregious by putting 40% more in the system. I think it came back to the Fed every night, and so it really wasn't a 40% increase, but it's still there, and I think it's still percolating its way through without even without having to grow. You know what I'm saying? Because
absolutely. I mean, I'm thinking that, you know, what I started out by saying in terms of the U.S. economy being more resilient to the rise in rates, but we have to still remember how much of that is real and how much of that is still the huge amount of fiscal stimulus that was pumped into the system. That hasn't still worked its way out.
Well, it's actually monetary stimulus, not fiscal.
Well, it actually both, though,
well,
because both actually, you know, have resulted in what appears to be a more resilient economy. But if people are using these alternatives, and companies are using them, and the government is using alternative forms of payment, alternative sources of payment, if you will, then this issue is going to become a bigger issue down the road, and it's one that we really need to keep on our dashboard rather than on the back burner.
Well, the two things. One is, are you not from the clan, which I'm starting to be, by the way, that there really never really has been any such thing as fiscal stimulus, because in every single case, maybe a couple, the central bank just prints the money for the fiscal stuff.
Yes.
I mean, it really isn't. If the federal government said, "All right, we're gonna spend $20 billion more next year, and we're gonna just borrow the $20 billion, and not have anything to do with the Fed," that would be fiscal stimulus, where you'd pick up what money people normally saved when people used to save, and we're gonna throw that into current consumption, so we're gonna kickstart the economy by that 20%. Nobody does that. I mean, the Fed immediately says, "We'll print the money for you. Don't worry about it," or "We'll print half of it," or "We'll do something." I don't see how there has ever been a case where there's been just nothing but fiscal stimulus in the last 300 years. I mean, has there been?
I mean, I think you know, as I mentioned earlier, there's you know, stuff that is really happening, and then there's stuff that is happening, you know, when it comes to the way it's being perceived or communicated by economists and strategists. So I would actually tend to agree with you that it hasn't been impactful necessarily. But I do think there's at least at a policy level an attempt to continue to pump more money into the system and attempt to, drive both fiscal and monetary policy. I don't think it's been impactful, though. That's well, where I agree with.
When's the last time in our lifetime or our grandkids' lifetime, if I had any, when are you going to see a guy like Biden come out with some, you know, ridiculously stupid spending plan, or Trump with some equally stupid tax-cutting plan for his buddies? When I say stupid, I mean something that the numbers don't add up what they're telling us. I'm not saying that tax cuts are a bad thing. I think tax cuts are a good thing. When are you going to see one of those guys come out and Chairman Powell or whoever is there going, where they interview him 30 seconds later and goes, knock yourself out, boys. You're not getting a dime out of me. When is that ever going to happen?
Yes, I agree. I hear what you're saying in terms of there is this, you know, we want to be able to think of the FOMC as a totally independent body, but there is definitely there's definitely a lot of pressure from the administration. There's definitely a lot of peer pressure, if you will. And it does seem, and one other thing I will say that I agree with, that if you look at the rate cuts that we've seen in the past, go back to Greenspan and go back to former Fed chairs, they've been done in a deliberate and gradual manner. It's not, you know, it's not necessary. I mean, there's been some times where there's been a knee-jerk reaction, but generally it is, there's definitely a connection between what's going on with the administration and the Fed. There's no question about it.
Well, Dan, in terms of you mentioned earlier people are paying stuff out of their, when I first kind of got on the air, we first started, PTI had been around for a while, but mostly we were transaction business, and we would do cover rights for people and so forth, but we really didn't have a money management arm until finally people call up and say, you design the strategy, you always call me every time you make a trade, why don't you just do it? I mean, I always say, yes, I like what you're doing. So that's how we essentially got into the money management piece. But for a long period of time, 1, 2, 3 times a month, I'd get a couple, mostly blue collar from Chicago, or around here, because we were on the score. And they'd come in, and inevitably, if both worked and had a 401k, and, you know, and got the little bit of match and were there for 25 years or whatever, the number inevitably was somewhere between $1.1 million and $1.5 million.
Right.
I never found out of these however many people, you know, that started our business for us, a lot of them aren't even around anymore, but I don't think I saw one person, there probably was one or two, but I didn't see one person where that retirement savings had been encumbered in any way. Yet now, in the last 10 years, when people come in from the same sort of, they're the same age, the same kind of deal, the number's never that much. We had to take some out for a down payment on a house. Oh, by the way, my daughter had this medical problem and she wasn't covered, so that was $400,000. It seems like all of these retirements have now become encumbered in some way, so they're actually less than they were back then. And by the way, you need way more to live. I don't think people are anywhere near as healthy right now.
I agree with you 100%. And I've seen the same thing we've seen the same thing in my business as well, that people are using IRA monies, not only at, you know, for those type of expenses and that you're discussing, or maybe the kid's car, or maybe, you know, the down payment for one of the children's new homes. We're seeing that happen. Part of it, I believe, is just the affordability. And this has been a theme that I have seen, that I have been talking about for the past decade, is affordability, you know, comes with, you know, housing and your utility costs and your daily expenses and food and just to be able to live. And you're right. I think there needs to be a shift in knowing how to save for retirement and really the goals of how much you need to be able to comfortably live. And the reason it's just sort of snowpiling and people are doing more and more of this is, and I see it with a number of clients, is that they may have retired 10 years ago when, you know, we didn't have the issues with inflation prior to all this crazy price increases during the pandemic, prior to all that money being pumped into the system. So now the average person who is, you know, at retirement age, just a little over retirement age, is struggling because there's limited sources of income, and at this point in their life, they're needing to go somewhere. Now, what I'll say to offset that is that, say, the average person, say middle class person, and I'll include myself in that, you've seen increases in your retirement plan. So if you have set money aside, you have seen over the past decade, basically the past 15 years, you've seen increases in your retirement plan and your 401ks. So that has helped. And the other thing that's helped is the equity that you've built in your home. So all of that has gone up at the same time. So although their daily expenses are more expensive, you know, they're paying more, things are less affordable, they have had this sort of, you know, these tailwinds in terms of their, you know, they're building their asset base. But I agree with you that those tailwinds that have built that asset base have built an asset base that's still not enough to be able to live on the current income, whether it be Social Security or pension or you know, income that's been set up for retirement purposes. So that's, you know, they have more money than they would have, but
they have way more wealth,
exactly. But I totally agree with you, and that's what we're seeing as well. One point I wanted to bring up that's happened this week, and you mentioned about Tuesday, the market selling off so much. I think it's important for the listeners to understand this. We do expect a lot of volatility this year in the equity markets, and that's why our strategies, Chief, your strategy, and our strategy of being more conservative, protecting capital, preserving capital, makes sense, and even more so for those people that we've just been discussing, which is a large part of the population, who are seeing that they have to take money out of their retirement sooner than they expected. So they want to see stability. And that's where our style and your style makes a lot of sense. What's happening, and what I believe happened on Tuesday, is that the market is breaking new highs. So again, asset growth asset values have just continued to increase. But people are now realizing, you know, okay, let's take some off the top. So Nvidia, for example, I think there were some insiders that were taking profits. And that has also been a theme, especially in the tech sector and in the biotech sector, where people are saying, okay, at some point we want to take this money and preserve this capital. I wish there was more education to let people know this. That's part of what
there's education
do.
Every day. Buy, buy, buy. It's all you hear.
Yeah, but that's not really the education that a lot of people need.
Well, Dan, do you notice in the last week, and really it's in the last week, you and I have been, by the way, thank you very much for encouraging me to hang in on my GDX. All of a sudden now, we're doing incredibly well in there. But the incredible run-up now in some of these stock markets around the world, okay, the incredible run-up in gold in the last week, the crypto going to the moon, which is to me worth nothing, but it's going up to the moon.
I agree.
The idea that this stuff is all for the first time in the last 10 years that I've been kind of warning about this, I'm actually thinking it's percolating here. These are not normal moves in the last week or two, and I, you know, this is not just. I mean, I don't give investment advice on the air. I do it to people privately, and neither does Dan. But if you have been participating in this wealth run-up, if you were smart enough to buy, or lucky enough, or whatever, dumb enough, or whatever it means, to buy 1,000 shares of NVIDIA at like $50, and it's now 902, and that you plan on living on, you better find a way to lock some of that in. I'm not saying sell it, but lock yourself in at some kind of price or something where if all of a sudden one day something bad happens and it's trading 200, and don't say it can't, that you're not giving it all back. You can't give it all back at this stage. It's like you've been at the blackjack table and you're way up. You got to put some in your pocket. If you just got some new raise and you're making $400,000 a year as a CEO someplace, I guess you don't have to do that, but that's not the people you and I deal with usually.
Right. No, I absolutely agree. And that's part of what we do as well as money managers. I mean, our job, what I've heard from people that the do-it-yourselfers, if you will, the day traders and the people that don't have the experience that we have in the industry, is that buy-in, sometimes they know, they can kind of follow the trends and they know when the market is you know, when there's a lot of momentum in a stock or where there's upside. The hardest part, I think, for a lot of individuals who are trying to do it on their own is when to sell, and also when to trim and do exactly what we do, which is to preserve what you've earned already. And that is a skill that takes years to develop. And I you know, will say that I had some great mentors when I first started out. But that's really our job. I mean, it's risk management, but it's also preserving the capital. And especially for those clients that are in retirement or approaching retirement. And that's what we've done with the money. That's why we've gone more to T-bills. If you look at the risk-return trade-off, it makes so much sense right now, and especially for those clients that are you know, looking for this, you don't want to still see growth in their retirement plans.
Well, but Dan, if you do the, and again, I've not in addition to not giving investment advice, I'm sure as hell I'm not going to talk about option trades on the air. But if you are investing,
I will. What you got?
There you go. But I mean, if you're talking about a spider trade, which is the S&P 500, and you're talking about, you know, if Greg had a 1-year-old, I think we're probably just going to buy some spiders for the 1-year-old and just let it hang, I would guess, even though we think it might be high here. But if you have, you know, a nest egg that you would like to put mostly in T-bills, but if the spiders go from 5.11 to say 5.30 by the end of the year or 5.40, wherever you think it might go, and your wildest dreams to the upside, you don't need to put $511 on the table to possibly make 30 in your best case. There's a way that you can do an option transaction where you pick up just that piece of the 30 and you put the rest in the T-bills. You can do that. Now, if it goes to, you know, 60, well, then you're limiting yourself, but okay then. It's better than a sharp stick in you. You don't need to have, you know, $5 million on the table if you think that the $5 million might make it to $5,100,000, because it could go the other way, in which case you got way more at risk than you think you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, unless you're putting money in a newborn's college account or you know, just trying to, if you're very young and you're trying to, you know, you have a long-term time horizon, then that makes sense. But otherwise I absolutely agree with you.
So Dan, the people in the long-term time horizons, if you buy a stock at 100 and your great-grandkid sells it at 101 40 years from now, did you make dough or not?
No.
I mean, I'm going to say no.
You may have beaten the market, right? Yeah. But you could have beat the market, but you haven't made money. So again, that goes back to why we still think it's a good time to be overweight T-bills, because you're getting that 5.5-6% in our strategy, 5.5 if you try to do it on your own or less. But we can get 6%, and you're getting, you know, a state income tax break, and you're also getting really virtually no risk.
Plus, if you want to take a little piece of it and be long the market, we can find a way to do that.
Absolutely.
I don't know if I told you this. One of my buddies, you know, I think out of all my college people's parents, there might only be like two of them alive. I think this lady's still alive. I've known her for, you know, in those days, you know, when you called somebody, you got the mom on the phone, so you knew everybody, right? So we had this big party, and she says to me, "So Tommy, Jimmy says that he bought this Citigroup stock, and this is before, you know, the meltdown in 2007, and it's down a little bit. He says, run for the long term. Does that mean it's a crummy buy?" And I go, "Yeah, it does." As he used to say on the trading floor, if all of a sudden you carry something overnight, you're now an investor, not a trader. And it was a crummy trade. The difference in time horizon between somebody in retirement and somebody on the trading floor is really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So, Deanna, thank you very much, buddy. Anybody who wants to put some money to work with the combination of sort of a protected portfolio if you need it, or some fixed income stuff like Dan does, we collectively would be happy to take care of you. S&P futures up 21 now. They like the European Central Bank holding interest rates steady, cuts inflation and growth forecasts. Not so sure that's good. Anyway, S&P futures up 21, NASDAQ futures up 107. We'll see if we get all of Tuesdays back today.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hey, we're back, and it's not tomorrow morning. What caused me to say that, Greg? I don't know. I'm looking out the window. Maybe because it's getting lighter earlier or something. I think it's
the
later.
Listeners don't know what you're talking about. I took that out post-production.
Oh, all right. Okay. Well, then I'll shut up, except for Traffic Brothers Sports. SP Futures up 20, NASDAQ Futures up 104. Listeners don't know what I'm talking about half the time, do they? Just saying.
Negative.
God. We have the Dow Futures up 74, so we're trying to make a run-up here. Individual stocks, we've got Microsoft up 341. It has been, going down pretty much. The stock has really been getting clobbered is Apple. And Apple is actually up 58 cents today, but it's under 170. And a lot of people had, Joel and a couple other people had by 180, 177 as a real support point in Apple. And it kind of went through there like dinner through a goose, didn't it, Greg? I mean, that doesn't mean you've got problems with Apple. It's still probably a pretty good investment, right? But Meta's up 441. They came out with some huge thing about AI again. Over in Europe, again, their Fed just made this announcement. Everything
danger,
jumped.
Will Robinson.
Yeah, danger. Well, these guys were all pretty much unchanged before that announcement, but now they aren't. The DAX up 52.3%, FTSE up 10.1, CAC around up 37.5. So they've become moderately bullish over there after the central bank held rates even, but then said inflation's coming down. Nikkei down 492, that's 1.2%. Back under, well, I guess they were a little, they ducked under 40,000, 39,598, so they were over 40,000 yesterday. Hang Seng down 208, that's 1.3%, 16,229. Shanghai down 12.4%, so pretty much a beatdown over in Asia. Yesterday we were up 75 in the Dow, up 26 in the S&P, up 91 in the NASDAQ. We were up a lot more than that, right, Greg? And then we kind of leaked into the close, but still stayed positive. Bonds, down 4 basis points. This is after the European announcement, 407. The Bund down 7 basis points, 2.25. Japan up 3.75. We've got oil down 44 cents, 78.69. Brent down 41 cents, 82.55. Natural gas unchanged, 192. RBOB unchanged, 254. See if the... still not much on the currencies, even with that announcement. 108.7 on the euro, 127.5 on the British pound. We've got gold, which is up even more now, 10.20, 21.68. Silver up 5 cents, 24.54. Silver is not going up as fast as gold. Copper up 6 cents, 2.93. Crypto down 2.28, 66.966. A lot of stuff there, Greg. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports? Bulls win again.
Good morning, everyone. It's 7:36 here in Chicago. 38 degrees right now. 48 today. Clouds with limited sun. Possible rain. Phoenix, 58 now. Variable clouds with rain after 9 a.m. there, especially during the afternoon hours. Sports, NBA Bulls win at Jazz. That was 119-117. And Northwestern loses at Michigan State, 49-53. Traffic, inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 21 minutes. Eden's from Lake Cook, 42 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf is 40 minutes. The Ryan, 95th to the Interchange, 29 minutes, and the Stevenson, 294 of the Ryan, is 36 minutes. And that's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Do we have Mr. Flanagan?
Good morning, Pat.
Off-balance sheet borrowing, and what do you think about this ridiculous, in my opinion, thing on the ballot here in Chicago? This is democracy at its worst, I think.
Well, as to the first, it isn't surprising to me at all, but it's symptomatic of the crookedness of, you know, any system that would build that kind of duplicity into it and, you know, show the numbers in whatever light they need to for whatever period they're trying to sway people on. And, you know, to just accept the fact that you can have that kind of double entry bookkeeping, which is a kind way of putting it, and expect people to believe anything they say. So I haven't believed anything they've said for a long time, so it doesn't reduce my, you know, their credibility with me. It was already about as low as you could get, but it just confirms how brazen this is. And as to the, you know, return of the referendum on the ballot for the transfer tax change, to me, the city forces wouldn't be pushing this so hard if they knew they could get it through the city council. They also don't want to take the heat for it if it, you know, worsens an already tough situation. So this way, just throw it on the voters. And I don't know how you feel about this upcoming election, Tom, but I have gotten so pummeled by emails telling me why I should ignore Election Day when it comes to voting, whether it's mail-in voting or early voting and all the places I can do it, blah, 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 blah. And they're still predicting 28% turnout. So as easy as we've made it and as much money as we've spent having poll workers in there 8 days a week, you know, to get people to vote, this is still going to be a humiliation for the activists who say, gee, if we only had, you know, elections so easily, you know, attendable, we'd have, you know, 100% turnout. And the reason people don't turn out, Tom, is because there's nothing to vote for. And, you know, how many unopposed judicial races will there be?
Oh, yeah, it's ridiculous.
On either side of whatever ballot you pull, it doesn't make any difference. The Board of Election Commissioners would never admit it, but they insult voters. They're always ragging because these people are not, you know, concerned enough and they're too apathetic. You know, they should come out and vote. But you give me one good reason why people should vote when there's no opposition. This is a Soviet-style election, and the powers that be want it that way. They don't want us to object to it. They want us, if we want to stay home, that's fine. They'll still get what they want, whether it's the, you know, the transfer tax change or any other schlub who wants to get on the ballot in November. They'll get what they want, and they don't care how we participate.
Well, we don't have a senator running this year, so that's kind of an odd two-year thing.
Nor have we for 30 years.
Well, I'm saying we don't even have anybody running this year, so it's not even nobody's not even being challenged. So I'm saying
that's all by design too, Tom.
No, but
the slating process is a complete, you know, sham.
My point is, neither one of our senators are up for re-election this year. Tammy my point is, the presidential elections, at this point, they're both unopposed. All right. The senatorial election is unopposed. Mike Quigley's running unopposed. So, I mean, sometimes you get some heat out of a Senate race, but this year, what, two out of three, two-year elections, you have a Senate race, correct? And this is the year we don't. So that's, by the way, I'm agreeing with you. I'm just saying it's even more ridiculous than usual because you don't have a presidential thing on there, you don't have a Senate thing on there, and you don't have a representative thing on there.
It's ridiculous then, too, Tom, is my point. The more money they spend to get huge turnout, it just depresses turnout. If they turn the election into something that's a non-issue, no matter how many hotly contested races there could possibly be, they do everything possible to make sure it's the
biggest. Jan, why is it, I mean, I know I'm probably in a minority here, but maybe not in Chicago. I literally walk out my front door, turn left, maybe 100 steps, and I walk into the little park district, and I vote. And yet, Matty Weber, executive producer now with the One Baby Is Not Sleeping, he'll be back soon, I hope. He and his wife go to this, his lovely wife, Jill, one of my favorite people. She they go to some place on a Saturday and they wait like 2 hours. I go, Matt, when have you ever waited 2 seconds down the block? What'd you do that for? He goes, I don't know. Everybody was doing it, so Jill wanted to do it. He goes, we're waiting in this hot-ass place on these stairs waiting to get to the top floor. For me, it's so damn convenient. I don't need any of this other stuff. I suppose if I had to go to Europe to find a client or something, was gone for a month, I'd do it. But I don't understand why you just can't go down the block and vote.
Well, I would love to do that, Tom, but I've lived in this precinct now for 27 years, and the trend practically every 4 or 5 years has been to move my polling place farther and farther away.
Really? Okay. So
it's now a six-block walk. And you know why that is, Tom? Is because if they're spending all this money to get people to man, you know, polling stations for how many days? 30 days before an election? 28 days? You name it. I mean, it's going on 7 days a week. You got people there, and they're going to, you know, also be paying them to open the mail-in ballots and count them for weeks afterwards. They can't afford to pay rent.
John, everybody who, I rarely say this because people are, you know, a lot smarter, and there's a lot of different views of the world than mine, but anybody who has a third grade education should realize that, especially in Chicago, but in this country, we don't want people to vote. It's not like we do. We don't. I mean, anybody who says, I don't care who you vote for, it's if I'm running for office, who says, quite frankly, I don't care who you vote for, but it's so important that you go out and use your right to vote. Hey, if you're not voting for me, stay home. I mean, come on, let's be real here, right?
We have to say we want people to vote, but we also don't want them to have to produce identification to vote.
Right, well,
oh, God help us, can't do that, because there's no possibility for fraud in the system.
Actually, I was asked for identification.
Well, you should be.
I,
not you personally, Tom. I'm just saying, if I got to get into, you know, a car and I'm supposed to have a driver's license with me or an ID, you know, to cash a check or anything else, why should voting be any less important than that?
You know why they asked for it? Out of curiosity. I've been there, what, 20-some years? When I wasn't such a lazy ass, when I signed my signature, I would put Thomas Howe. Somewhere along the line, I said, screw it, I'm just putting Tom. And yeah, so then they said, okay, do you have something else that says you've changed your signature to Tom? And I said, sure. I pulled out my driver's license. They said, okay. And then now that it hasn't been challenged since. They must have wrote something in there. But I guess I'm saying we really don't want, if we wanted people to vote, we would pick a day, and we'd do it on a Saturday and Sunday like they do in Europe, and we'd have the polls open for 2 days, where everybody can get there. We wouldn't pick a below zero day in January or something and give the people from the county the day off to go vote when nobody else can get home in the snow and rain to do it. We don't want people. I mean, who's kidding who? Have the polls open for 2 days. If you actually are out of town or need an absentee ballot, if you're in the armed forces or something, give you water. Otherwise, get your ass over there if you really want to do this right.
I think that's minimal, Tom. If they really wanted people to vote, they would treat you respectfully as a voter and let you feel that your vote counted for something more than just rubber stamping somebody else's choice.
Well, but how do you how do you go to the point where everything? I mean, nothing's easy, John. I mean, and on the one hand, you criticize, not you and me, criticize all these decisions. But someday, somewhere, I think a judges were all appointed. So finally somebody said, wait a minute, that's way too much power for somebody. We don't want to do that. We'll have elected judges. Well, how many judges are there? Well, there's about 100 of them. Okay. So then we're going to have these groups that give you this, you know, the law group or somebody else, but basically means that people have to go in front of the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, wherever it is, and be interviewed, and essentially they're picked anyway, because they're now the people that say vote for Flanagan for judge, which, by the way, you'd win because of the Irish name. Vote for Flanagan for judge. And when the Democratic thing comes out, or Republican, whichever I happen to be, they'll be vote Flanagan. Okay, so we're not appointing anybody, but we also know that nobody's going to read about 100 different campaigns, could care less. So you're going to have these people, your party says vote for this guy. What's the difference between that and appointing you? I mean, it really isn't any different, but it comes down to...
There's absolutely no difference. And even, you know, the whole judicial evaluation process, where there's how many different, you know, interest groups where potential candidates have to go in and never, ever vote against the person in this interest group, which they can't, of course, say as a judge, but you're expected to show that you have absolutely no fear of voting for, whether it be, you know, group A, B, C, D, E, F, G, all the way down to Z. And this is supposed to mean what? That you know how to work the crowd that you're speaking in front of? Tom, all of those committees, when they, if they let you come in at all to present your case and decide whether they're going to show you qualified or not for the election, there's non-disclosure agreements that you have to sign so that you can't even discuss the process, what questions you were asked, the hostility in the room towards you. Oh, yeah. None of that can be talked about, or if they don't like you, they've got some grudge against you, and the machine has told these groups not to certify somebody, you could be damn sure they're not going to certify you. So
we don't, you know how I met, you've met Eric Greg, haven't you?
Yeah.
Eric, you know, Eric and I became friends. Talk about the dumbest story on earth. Dr. J's wife, Bridget, was a judge at the time. So I go, okay, Bridget, who, in the retention ballot, I said, okay, who do I vote no for? And she goes, you got to vote no for these like five people. They never even show up at work, much less do a bad job. And they never even show. And yet they're getting paid. And they just keep extending stuff, and other people pick up their stuff. So I forget the list. And I go, okay, well, I don't want to vote for those people, so I guess I'll vote no for all of them. I vote no for everybody. So, you know, and I'm sitting there, I probably shouldn't have done that. So I get on to the Triple E, and I sit down, mind my own business, and all of a sudden this big black dude comes in, sits right next to me, and we start talking. I mean, there's a million chairs open, but Eric likes to talk like me. And I go, he says, where are you coming from? And I said, well, I just came from the voting place, and I voted no for all the judges. He goes, damn, so did I. That was a bit of a beginning of a beautiful friendship. And until he moved out of the neighborhood, that was our date. After the election, we'd both go down there like 5 o'clock and meet at the AAA at 5:30 and talk about the people, because he knew, you know, he knows everybody who's running. I mean, but it's, and I don't, the whole thing is okay, now we're going to vote for these people, but nobody cares. Actually, John, I have a piece of paper here that I can't find it. It's an article about why are people so adamant to be left or right or something like that. And they said it actually starts somewhat, whatever you want to call it. There's a method to the madness. It says all this politics. If you have a family and a real job and two kids and three kids, four kids, and you got a job and they're texting you at night and all this, you don't really have the time or the wherewithal to get yourself up on the issues. Plus, issue we're talking about, most people realize that their individual vote isn't worth squat, right? I mean, it's not the Bonanza show where, you know, Hoss and Little Joe are running for mayor and it comes down to the last vote and they're tied and Papa Ben is sitting there flipping a coin in the phone booth. I mean, everybody knows whether they show or they don't, doesn't make any difference to anybody. Now, collectively, that's not true, but individually, it surely is true, right? So his point is, so people don't bone themselves up on the issue, and if they happen to be from the right or from the left, they look at an issue and they go, okay, where's the right on this one? And that's now their position. They essentially not just push the vote off to other people, they kind of push some of their thinking off, or not necessarily their thinking, but their knowledge of the issues off on their side. It all comes down, becomes because the vote itself is not, it's not worth it. I mean, it is for us, because, well, you're interested, and I'm in the business of essentially telling people I'm watching all this stuff for them and their money. I mean, that's my job, essentially. Not necessarily a concern about, you know, Chicago politics, but by and large, you keep abreast of the news, and if an earthquake lands on New York City, I'm at least supposed to know about it the next day, because, by the way, I've got several million dollars in a person's money. I can't be, you know, a dopo. So, or, you know, at least totally. I can see why this happens, but we've made it so, you're right. Going down the block to vote. Now, the last mayoral election, to me, I don't understand why people didn't vote for that. And I don't understand why people didn't vote with the one with Jesse's kid. And that thing was amazingly hard fought for 10 people for 5 months. And then to have 30% of the people show up is almost insulting for the work those people put in. So I don't know the answers, Dan, but you're right. But the fact is, we aren't capable of trying to figure out which out of the 100 judges should be in there. And, oh, by the way, we don't trust somebody else to pick them for us. Isn't that kind of where we're at?
Well, but it's all about assimilating and hanging on to power, Tom. And this is what's so laughable about the so-called threats to democracy that are being bandied around. This country has so few vestiges of a democracy, and in Cook County almost.
Oh, without a doubt.
But I'm surprised anybody would be shocked to hear this. But it's about, if people really knew the process, for example, about, say, selecting judges, and that everybody who has been slated by the Democrats, because Republicans are non-existent pretty much in Cook County, that has required the payment of a fee to the organization to get that. They don't just, give you a spot on the slate because you're a whiz kid at your law firm or the state's attorney or something else. It's because you paid to get there. We talk about pay to play. They never, of course, would say that. The Democratic Party organization would never say, it's a quid pro quo. You've got to pay how many thousands of dollars to get on the ballot. But that's how it works. So who's kidding who? Are we supposed to respect that process? We're supposed to think these people really bring something to the bench? I don't think so. All they bring is their checkbook.
I wanted to. Russell wants to talk about it on next Wednesday, and maybe you on Monday, because you guys come from a kind of a different perspective. When it comes to giving money to these people, how do you figure out who you should give? There's people that give a lot of money to these judges' campaigns. A lot of it, I think, is friends and family. Clearly, if it's a state legislator or a U.S. rep or Senate, and you're Pfizer giving them money, you know why you're doing it, right? But if you give money to a judge who's running, I get the part where, I was talking to my buddy Bill last night about it, and I give a bunch of money to a judge, he says, what happens if the person lands at 26th Street for the next 30 years or 20 years of their career? You're never going to be in front of them. Do you give all this money for the remote chance that they might end up in the Chancery Division and all of a sudden you've got a huge insurance case in front of them and you're State Farm and you gave them a bunch of dough and they don't recuse themselves and all of a sudden you win this case that's millions of dollars that maybe you shouldn't have won it? He says most people end up in Bridgeview or they end up at 26th Street or some other place. He goes, you're never going to see that person. To the point where it's not the same quid pro quo as like a Congress would. And yet, some of these elections, there's all kinds of money involved. Now, I can see an appellate court. Now, by the way, how crooked were they with getting rid of this, reversing this lower court ruling on this ballot thing? But or were they crooked? They just believe that. I don't know. Maybe the home rule gets involved, but. And why do you? What do you expect when you give a judge a bunch of money, other than maybe you just like the person?
Well, you like it to be a judiciary, by and large, where the judge thought beyond his or her immediate, situation, and decided what's best for, this community, for the county, for the system. If this person is guilty and poses a threat in a criminal case, well, you don't give him a lenient sentence if you think they're just going to go out and repeat it. So you have somebody who's got some smarts about why is so-and-so really sitting in this job. I really believe, Tom, that if you are an outsider in the system, if somehow you're able to get on the ballot and get elected as a judge and you haven't bowed down to the powers that be or paid the requisite fee to get slated, then you will be at 26th Street Annex for the rest of your judicial life, and you'll be given every blankety blank assignment possible because you dared to buck the system. On the other hand, when it comes to appellate court races and God help us Illinois Supreme Court races, contributions there are the Con Eds of the world,
of the
state of Illinois and every other possible business enterprise that's big enough to worry about what the Supreme Court does.
So they get turned down by a rate increase, they're going right there and they're gonna run right into you.
Of course,
yeah.
Of course. So no wonder people don't trust the system, Tom. I mean, they haven't trusted the legislative system for a long time. Now they are really starting to distrust the judicial system. And it's when you have things like the Colorado Supreme Court doing what it just did and got smacked down. Lou was talking about this earlier. No wonder people just want to stay as far away from the system as possible and just check out of it. Why go out and vote for a system that can't help you and can only hurt you?
Well, I know I think people's individual morality, or can't tell what people's morals are, really. But how many years ago was it with the guy who got all the money from State Farm, and State Farm just happened to land in his courtroom with some huge injury case, and the guy refused to take himself out, recuse himself? He goes, what do you mean? Yep. Why should I do that? Well, I mean, it's not whether you think you're partial or not. It's whether anybody else would think that. Recusal is not about you, right? It's about the process, I think. But saying.
The flip side of that, Tommy, it's one thing if you've got some kind of interest in what's appearing before you. But take the Letitia James situation, the Attorney General in New York after this ridiculous, hoopla against Trump. Now her latest thing is going after the beef company in Brazil. Lou mentioned this too earlier.
Yeah.
He's like, well, why is she doing that? Is this something that New Yorkers really should worry about? Well, look, it's wielding the New York, judicial system against a foreign corporation because they're trying to extort some kind of concessions out of them or deny them the right to do business in New York.
We have to wonder who their competitors are and how much money they gave her.
Well, it's the replay of the crooked election in Brazil between Lula da Silva and Bolsonaro, and Bolsonaro's got the ranchers behind him. This is a way of strong arming JBS.
Well, the idea that people can go after people through the, I mean, as you know, I'm a zero Trump fan, but the idea that he's being raked over to Kohl's and all these different places, that to me is abominable. Mike Murphy was on, and even with the stuff, the classified documents. I mean, I said, Mike, if they were really all that classified, wouldn't somebody be looking for them? And he goes, yeah. I mean, how classified would they be if nobody even knows they're gone? I mean, I'm not saying that he's right in doing that. I think Trump is liable to do anything that, just to piss people off. But, you do wonder, how classified could they be? I mean,
remember, Tom, you got to give Trump credit for paying back his loans. Unlike a lot of real estate developers, I wish we had 10 Trump Towers in Chicago.
Yeah,
we got the one. Those people, for whatever, however they went into it, all those lenders in New York were perfectly willing to do business with Trump again.
He didn't pay the painters, and he's still stealing too much water from the river.
But if he's as big a crook as he's claiming is, they wouldn't be coming back to him.
I actually
have to get out of town and go somewhere.
That's a good question as to why people continue to work for the guy when they never get paid. But maybe it's paid.
All those lenders got paid. Now.
I'm talking about.
They all made money. Okay. They made exactly what they hoped to make on it.
I'm talking about the people like us, the painters, the carpenters, those people. He's been stiffing for three centuries. His dad used to stiff them.
Come on, John.
I heard a bazillion stories about the guy long before.
I hear it all the time, Tom, and I don't buy it from you or anybody.
Okay, so I'm sitting in a Buckingham. Long before he's a politician, and somebody says something, what do you think about Trump? And he goes, don't even bring up the name. Two or three of my friends did work for the guy. One guy put up a tennis court. He never got paid. He's notorious for not paying people. Okay, you're saying it's all untrue?
I'm not saying it's all true. Tom, every project I ever worked on in real estate involved mechanics liens all over the place because thought they were getting stiff, or ran out of bill ahead of time, and they got caught at it. All sorts of reasons why people feel disgruntled they didn't get paid. What they were owed. I don't buy that Trump is the only one who does that.
The only stuff he's done is crooked. Okay, and his dad didn't wing people out of rent. I mean, if you're going to vote for the guy, fine, I get it. You don't like Biden. I don't like him either. But let's not try and reanoint the man as a saint.
Your brush is way too broad, Tom. Too broad.
I think the guy has been a crook since day one, and maybe Biden has too.
It's a supposedly free country. You can think that. I don't.
Okay.
I don't.
SP futures up 20.
Otherwise, either.
SP futures up 20. Nasdaq futures 1. I think he's a saint. On that note, back tomorrow. Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed.
back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.